Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we'll hear from an analyst about Russia's military activity in Sidr, Syria. Consider what are some U.S. options in Syria. We'll hear of a way to keep the dust mites away.
Scientists say that a normal, regular bed contains at least 100,000 of those creatures.
And from our music department, the beautiful now music of Zed. It's right ahead here on The Voice of America. Reckless, dangerous, and provocative. Those are the words used by U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner Monday to describe Russian incursions into Turkish airspace in the pursuit of terrorist targets in Syria. My colleague Victor Beatty is following the story and joins us now in the studio. Victor.
Well, hello, Susan. Toner said such incursions that have also been denounced by Turkey and NATO demonstrate the importance of consultation and restraint in shaping the international response to the presence of the Islamic State, also known as ISIL, in Syria.
We said many times that we would welcome a constructive role for Russia if it takes the fight to ISIL. Thus far, we've not seen that's the case. We've seen no indication that they're actually hitting ISIL targets. It says it wants to take the fight to ISIL. We've not seen that thus far. Frankly, what we've seen thus far is that Russia's decision to undertake military action in Syria and intervene in that civil war that's taking place between Assad and the moderate Syrian opposition, frankly, we consider it a strategic mistake. If they are serious about taking the fight to ISIL, we can see a role for them to play constructively, certainly within the context of deconflicting any action that they may be taking against some of the targets that we're also hitting. Our primary purpose here is to support those groups in northern Syria, Kurds, Arabs, others, who are waging successful attacks against ISIL, that dislodging them from some key strongholds, and frankly clearing ISIL out of that territory. That remains our focus. We're part of a 60-some-odd member coalition doing that. If Russia wants to play in that sphere, then we would see a role for them, but we don't see that yet.
That's U.S. spokesman Mark Toner speaking Monday in Washington. Russia last week began airstrikes against targets in Syria, claiming attacks on both IS positions and what it calls terrorist groups, rebel factions that oppose the Syrian government. Russia analyst Leslie Templeman-Holmes of the University of Melbourne in Australia told me such incursions were inevitable, and Moscow's unfolding strategy in Syria is highly unpredictable.
One thing I've learned from studying Russia for 40 years or so is that you simply cannot predict their leaders. Putin is very unpredictable. He knows that the Turks and NATO behind Turkey is extremely upset about these two incursions, claiming that these were a mistake or that it was only for a few seconds. But we've got high-level technology. The Russians have extremely sophisticated technology. Those kinds of excuses just don't cut it.
There is a coalition of some 40 Syrian insurgent groups, including some of the most powerful fighting against Bashar al-Assad and armed by Arab states, who've called on regional states to forge an alliance against Russia and Assad's other big foreign backer, Iran. That obviously raises the ante for Moscow.
It does. Not only for Moscow, it raises the ante for all of us, because this whole situation is getting messier and messier. The Russians tend to like to support what they see as legitimate governments, and they see Assad as more legitimate than the 40 groups you refer to. The trouble is that the whole situation is so messy. One of the reasons the West has been a little cautious in where it stands on the whole Syrian issue is because whereas some of the anti-Assad forces are moderate and would get wholehearted support from the West, others are definitely more in the terrorist area. They're definitely terrorist organizations, apart from IS itself. And this makes the whole thing complicated. That when you say 40 groups, they range across a whole, that's a whole range from moderate to radical extremists. And by getting more of the Arab states involved, this is, as you say, the phrase used, upping the ante, but not merely for Russia. It really is getting totally out of control.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, who's speaking in Spain Monday, said Moscow is pursuing a losing strategy in Syria. His quote, Russia has escalated the civil war, putting further at risk the very political resolution and preservation of Syria's structure of future governance it says that it wants. It remains my hope, he said, that Vladimir Putin will see that tethering Russia to a sinking ship is a losing strategy.
When I last spoke to you, Victor, I talked about transition as one of the possible ways out of this apparent deadlock. I still think that that's a possibility, that the transition concept, that as long as it's made clear that Assad is on his way out, but not necessarily tomorrow, that this would be a negotiating position, both for Russia and for the West, and indeed for Turkey and the Middle Eastern states all involved in this. But there's no question that, in my opinion, if Putin really is determined to keep Assad in power long term, then there is absolutely no doubt that he is on a losing streak.
Holmes says the Russian presence in Syria is fraught with risk, and it's time for Russian officials to sit down with their Western counterparts and consider an exit strategy. He says while he understands Russia's need to be recognized as a global power, such status also requires a level of responsibility that includes compromise, conversation, and political discussion, not just saber-rattling.
Thank you, Victor, for that report.
All right, Susan.
Sarah Williams has joined me here in the studio with a look at what is being said on social media about Syria. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Susan. Well, according to Topsy, the Economist says if Russian President Vladimir Putin's intention was to draw attention to his country's military might and embarrass the United States, he succeeded in what they call this risky move to prop up the Syrian government. Sky News reports that NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says a substantial increase in Russian forces in Syria include ground troops. Sky further reports that if employed, the tactic would have echoes of the crisis in Ukraine, where Russian troops apparently help rebels, while Moscow denied its soldiers were involved in the conflict. Bloomberg says Russia shuns a no-fly zone for Syria. Meanwhile, Saudi clerics and Islamist rebels call for retaliation against Moscow's continued bombing campaign. Russian officials have ruled out ground forces taking part in operations in Syria. The New York Times says Russia is offering what it calls volunteer forces to fight in Syria. Russia called its air incursion Saturday in Turkey an innocent mistake because of weather conditions. But the U.S. has rejected the claim. A Russian foreign ministry spokeswoman reminded the U.S. of its support following the terror attacks of September 11, 2001. Writer Emma Ashford called on the U.S. to think carefully about any action in Syria. Writing in Newsweek, she says U.S. officials must avoid increased intervention in Syria. And that's the roundup of news about Russia and Syria. Susan?
Thank you very much, Sarah. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Americans throw away about 25 million extruded polystyrene foam or styrofoam cups each year. Unfortunately, polystyrene waste makes up a major portion of the countless tons of plastic debris in the ocean and in landfills. It takes hundreds of years before the plastics biodegrade or break down. Now scientists at California's Stanford University and China's Beihang University say that the mealworm may provide a natural tool to help solve this plastic pollution problem. The American and Chinese researchers found that these tiny worms can actually live on a diet of styrofoam and other forms of polystyrene. The scientists also found that microorganisms in the worms' bellies biodegrade the plastic after processing nutrients from it and produce waste that appears to be safe to use as soil for crops. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
A top Russian lawmaker said a unit of Russian volunteers, including battle-hardened veterans who have fought in eastern Ukraine, may join Syrian government troops fighting Islamic State and other terrorists in that country. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shenawy spoke with Edward Jurejian, a former U.S. ambassador to Syria, about the impact of the rising Russian military involvement in the region. Welcome, Mohammed.
Thank you.
So, Mohammed, some believe that what started as a call from Russia for a broader international coalition to fight ISIS is turning into a direct Russian fight not only against ISIS but also against Syrian opposition.
That's actually true, Sue. And the Russian foreign minister used ambiguity to cover this dual mission for the Russian military in Syria. He said, if a group looks like or acts like terrorists, then it is a terrorist group. And that seems to be a real cover, not only to attack ISIS, but also to target Syrian opposition as well, as Ambassador Gerasian explains.
There's one thing for Russia to join an international coalition targeting ISIS as the common enemy. And ISIS is the common enemy of every single government, country, regime in the region. And to me, that is the major common threat that this coalition should be targeting, not rebel groups that are opposed to the Assad regime. If Russia is going to use this enhanced military presence in Syria to also target anti-Assad groups, then its agenda is really to bolster the faltering regime. It's really a dual agenda that the Russians have.
Ambassador Gerasian said there is still room for diplomacy in bringing together a broad-based international coalition that would effectively target ISIS, but he said that needs a broad strategy that requires a UN initiative that everyone can join. He said the future of Syrian President Assad is a sticking point, but perhaps a formula that would keep him in the beginning of a political transition, but not at its end, could be some sort of a compromise.
But some experts say that Russia is exploiting a vacuum created by what they call U.S. inaction in Syria. Does the U.S. have any options now to prevent a collapse of the Syrian opposition?
Actually, yes. It's obvious that the Syrian opposition lacks some sort of air defenses against the barrel bombs that the regime is using within its air power supremacy. And that's why Ambassador Gerasian has been advocating for some options still available for the U.S.
A no-fly zone, perhaps on the Turkish-Syrian border, some sort of safe haven, and some sort of military action. Nothing to do with troops on the ground, no troops on the ground, but something to help neutralize Syria's monopoly of air power should be considered.
Ambassador Gerasian pointed out to another potential threat that could widen the conflict in Syria. He said, if reports of Iranian ground forces crossing the borders to Syria to bolster the regime are confirmed, that could worsen the situation in Syria.
Well, thank you, Mohammed, for that analysis.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, a way to keep away the ickies living in your bed. And Zed has another hit on his hands. Many people around the world suffer from dust-related allergies caused mainly by tiny mites that live in bed linen and such things. Polish scientists report they have successfully tested a fabric that is impenetrable to the microscopic critters. Science reporter George Putich joins us here in the studio to talk about it. Welcome, George.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you. Being an allergy sufferer myself, this sounds like a great thing. So please tell us all about it.
Okay, first, what we need to know is that dust mites are nasty little creatures.
Yes, I've seen pictures of them, and they're really icky.
They are. They are. And unfortunately, they are our bedfellows. Scientists say that a normal, regular bed contains at least 100,000 of those creatures. Now, they're harmless themselves, but unfortunately, they produce an enzyme called proteases that causes severe allergies in many people. And it's not the even yuckier thing about it, it's not the dust mites themselves, it's their feces. And they produce a lot of it, and it's in our bedding. We cannot get it. It's impossible to totally eradicate them. They are always around us because they eat our shedded skin.
George, this is getting worse and worse.
It is. I'm afraid it is, but this is something we have to live with. What we can do, we can reduce their number, and that can help people who are suffering from dust allergies.
How does this fabric work?
The fabric works in a simple way, actually. It has such a structure that it allows moisture and air to go through, but does not allow the dust mites to go through, and especially their feces particles. So the scientists in Woods University, in Medical University in Poland, say that they have manufactured this fabric that reduces the quantity of dust mites for up to 70%. And they say that people who have tested the fabric say that for the first time they actually managed to sleep nice.
So it's comfortable. It doesn't feel starchy or odd.
That's what they say. It's comfortable. It's it's very soft. It looks very soft in the picture. And what's even more important, the quality of that fabric does not go away with washing.
So on washing day, you're still safe?
Correct.
Any idea on how much this might cost?
Unfortunately, no, because it is not yet in production, but the scientists in Woods expect that it will be in production very soon.
So if the mites can't get through the linen, do they stay in your mattress?
They stay in your mattress, but there are ways to clean the mattress, and one should explore a little bit, if it's possible, on the internet, because there are many methods that can help reduce the number of mites in the mattress.
Well, I don't know if I'll be able to sleep tonight, George.
I'm sorry, but you know, they are our companions, unfortunately.
Well, thank you very much, George, for stopping by.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
This is Greenbeat for a healthier planet.
With a face only a mother could love, this frog and thousands like it are helping farmers in Cambodia as natural pesticides. Basically, they eat the pest that can destroy rice crops.
I first chose to raise frogs on my farm here because in this area we have big problems with harmful insects which can destroy everything.
Rice farmer Ras Mal has been raising frogs since 2006.
I used to spend a lot of money, firstly on fertilizer, and secondly on expensive chemical sprays.
Mal's rice yields nearly doubled after he began using frogs to protect his crops against pests. The Cambodia Center for Study and Development of Agriculture promotes the use of frogs as a natural pesticide. But because of widespread frog hunting, most farmers won't raise them. Frogs are a popular and inexpensive food source in Cambodia, so some agriculture experts are urging restrictions on frog hunting during the growing season. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
From the music library today, it's Zed. Joining me here in the studio to talk about it all is the host of Border Crossings, Larry London. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Susan. Well, it's great to be here once again. And yes, Zed, whose real name is Anton Zaslavsky, who was born in Russia and he grew up in Germany and now calls America home, is at it again. He's got a new album, which is called True Colors, which follows his Grammy Award-winning Clarity that he had out a couple of years ago. He's worked with everyone in the business these days, Ariana Grande, Selena Gomez, who he dated for a short while. He's written for Justin Bieber, worked with Lady Gaga, and now he's at it again with a guy named John Bellion on a brand new song.
And he's got talents all over the place.
He's got talents everywhere you turn. This guy is amazing. He is only 26.
Uh-huh.
And yet he is an internationally acclaimed producer, DJ, and a musician, songwriter. He does a little dancing, but I don't think he does much dancing. But his real name is Anton, and I asked him when I spoke with him recently why he went with Zed, and he said because that's the way the Europeans say zero, is Zed. So he just thought that'd be something cute and clever versus using his name Anton, although everybody backstage called him Anton. And the new song is doing well. It's in the top 20 on the Billboard charts.
And the name of it?
The new song is called Beautiful Now, and it features a singer, because Zed does not sing. He only produces the music. This one features John Bellion, who is from New York. We're beautiful now, we're beautiful now.
And this can be heard on your program.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the interview with Zed will be airing on Border Crossings in the very near future. You have to tune in every day to hear the exact air date. But we're going to be putting this on. And he's an interesting guy. And we talked a lot about the new album and electronic dance music and why it is so popular right now in the U.S. It's been popular a long time in Europe, but just in the last year or two, here in America, we've embraced EDM.
Now you've got me curious. Why is it becoming popular in the U.S.?
Ooh, you'll have to tune into the Zed interview.
Oh, no, don't do that. Give me a little hint.
Well, he just said he can't answer for a country, but he said that it is an infectious beat-driven sound. In fact, people like Justin Bieber have embraced the sound, and Justin's new album coming out November 13th will be an EDM-driven album. And Janet Jackson's near the top of the charts with her new music. She's back after a number of years. She's put out an EDM album. So that is a new trend in music that seems to be very popular right
it's
now.
It's on the way up, but way is up it going to quickly be on the way down again?
That remains to be seen or heard.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Larry, for stopping by.
Thank you, Susan.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. recently welcomed India to Washington for the first U.S.-India strategic dialogue. Speaking about the dialogue after meeting with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi in New York, President Barack Obama said, "We've elevated our ties. We've committed ourselves to a new partnership between our two countries." During the strategic dialogue, the U.S. and India discussed how to grow their already strong economic partnership. Annual trade in goods and services between the U.S. and India has grown nearly fivefold since the year 2000 to just over $100 billion. There is potential for that figure to reach more than $500 billion in the years immediately ahead, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Bilateral trade is also poised to grow substantially, as are employment opportunities for people from both countries. With regard to security matters, U.S.-Indian cooperation continues to grow. Both countries have agreed on a new 10-year defense framework and also on a shared strategic vision for the Asia-Pacific and Indian Ocean that stresses security, maritime law, peaceful resolution of disputes, and economic connectivity across the region. The U.S. is one of India's largest defense suppliers, and both countries are partnering to develop and produce advanced defense systems. On energy, both countries are trying to grow economically in ways that are green and clean. What is clear to everybody, said Secretary Kerry, is that the choices one makes in order to grow green and clean do not mean a choice between growth or the environment. Both can take place simultaneously. Indeed, the U.S. is providing $30 million over 5 years to scale up renewable energy integration into India's power grid. On health, India and the United States are striving to end preventable maternal and child deaths in developing countries. Meanwhile, the U.S. and India have begun a new discussion on oceans conservation and are also building an important partnership in the crucial area of internet governance. Together, said Secretary Kerry, we can help to shape a world that is more secure, peaceful, and prosperous than it was before our efforts came together.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States.